Have you heard that before? Play England document. And so what they say is that a bad hazard and risk is something the child can't see the danger of, and it has no benefits to the child.
Mm.
Okay? And a good hazard and risk is something where the child can see that it's dangerous, but it has benefits. Mm. So a bad hazard, for example, would be dead wood up in the tree. Because no child goes around looking at the dead wood. That's our job, is to remove the bad hazards. Okay, that the child can't see, or make them less, you know, bad hazards. A bad hazard could also be, like we had at the kindergarten, we had a pond and it had lots of, at certain times of year, lots of water lilies. And my concern was that the two-year-olds, so it depends on the age, the two-year-olds wouldn't know the difference between the solid ground and the water lily thing. So that was a bad hazard for those two-year-olds, not for the 4 and 5-year-olds, because they knew where the water thing is. So again, it also depends on age.
Mm. I had a teenager and we had a bog.
Yeah.
And it, grass growing on the top, underneath, 1.5 meters, with about 1 meter of silt underneath it.
Oh, no.
It was out of bounds. He was playing, he was not a beast. Ran out, middle of January, straight into the middle of it, up to here.
Good
and every
lesson.
Time he moved, he sank.
Mm.
But it was a fantastic fun activity to get him out.
Get him out of
here. all the other kids.
Everybody like, helped.
Yeah, it was a big project to get him out. And they find him clothes. But
save
it is, it's
friend.
That. Sorry?
Save the friend.
Yeah.
Save him.
Save
yeah,
a friend.
They did discuss that.
Shall we not? So again, and I think it's really important that children do have those accidents and make most mistakes. I've worked with children. There was two logs across a creek in Australia, and there was a stream or a creek flowing underneath. And I'd risk assessed another space up much higher where we went, but the children wanted to go further. And I thought, fine, I'll do a dynamic risk assessment, and that's again those three gentlemen's work.
Mm.
So that's a risk assessment we do on the spot, which is what we do all day for ourselves and for everybody else. So dynamic risk assessment. And I checked, done all of that. So we went to a different space and there were these two logs over, and then the boy, about the 10-year-old, said, can I go to the other side? And I sort of had a quick look. You know, it wasn't a cliff and the water wasn't fast flowing. So I said, yeah, sure. And I said, what could the dangers be? And he said, well, I could fall in. I said, yeah, you know the consequences. So I always ask, what do they think the consequences are going to be? And the first time he went over, he was like this.
Mm.
And he got to the other side, and he had this big smile on his face. You know that sense of achievement, which again, we don't often see with children anymore, that I did it. And then he came back and he did it again, and he went faster and faster and faster. Got more and more confident. And in the end, he was picking up sticks from either side, jumping to the middle of those logs and throwing the sticks into the stream. Now, why was I not stopping him?
Because he was having fun.
He was having fun.
You saw his ability, and you saw that he was able and confident.
Yeah,
he was
overconfident.
He'd done the risk assessment himself, so he knows that it's okay to do that.
Mm. Yeah. And quite honestly, I was standing with my camera, because I knew what was going to happen. I was waiting for the moment for it to fall in. And he did. He slipped. He fell in. He cried for a second because he got a fright. And then he got out and he said, I'm all wet, can I swim now? So I would rather they make those mistakes with us there as professionals who are monitoring and supervising and have done the risk assessments, than that maybe tomorrow he goes with his friends without somebody watching and doing that dynamic risk assessment, and maybe goes to a place where the water is fast flowing or much deeper.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Your response will have played a huge part though as well.
Sorry?
Your response will have played a huge part. The fact that when he fell in, you didn't panic or have a fright on your face. You just,
I knew that was
you
were
obviously watching professionally, but there.
Yeah.
Whereas I think a lot of parents, when they fall in, they're there immediately, but they're the normal parent with their head up to there, they're going, it's interesting, isn't it, how when a child hurts themselves, they look for that reaction.
Yes.
Actually, also sometimes I find they're fearful of getting told off, which is amazing.
Mm.
They don't want to come to you with their scratch on their finger or their muddy knees. Because
then you get phone calls from the parents to say, how did the child get this scratch and scrape?
That reaction can actually cause great harm.
I've got
friends that have phobias of spiders because their mum found a spider in the basket and screamed the house down.
Same with dogs, actually, that's a really common one.
Parents
might be frightened of dogs. The children are inherently frightened of dogs.
Yeah.
Passed down.
I had a 4-year-old and he killed a frog at one of my sessions, and I was, my reaction was to get very cross. And I thought, actually, I've got to understand this, he's four.
Yeah.
So I just said, Ted, what are you doing? Why have you killed that frog? We look after nature, it's one of our things. What's going on? He went, well, Daddy kills spiders. That's really interesting. So I had to have a little conversation with Daddy saying, you've got to stop killing spiders.
Yeah.
But it can also have to reverse
in
the year. So through part of my work, I worked in a place and I was sat in the office with the door open and a kid came running down the road and towed this pigeon as hard as he could.
Oh no!
Right from the gate. And for a second I was like, did that just happen?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was kind of like still in this moment of, did he actually get it? Did it fly off? You know, one of those. I can't see a kid actually managing to do that. Anyway, a couple of minutes later, the mum comes in with this pigeon with its side caved in and it's half dead. And I was so angry at the kid, and I thought, I've got no vets nearby, so I necked it myself. But I was so angry.
I
necked it myself. The problem was that because I was angry at the child, and I was emotionally upset about it, I then developed a fear of pigeons. Yeah, and it took a while for me to get over it. So it can have effect on you as a leader as well.
That's interesting.
But it was kind of like, I knew where it had come from.
Yeah. Yeah.
I knew the moment it happened that it was the wrong thing to do. But it wasn't until much later when I thought back on it, it's like, oh, okay, I've put myself in this emotionally heightened state. I've seen this traumatic event. I've then created a traumatic event for myself, which is linked in with the initial traumatic event, which may have led to something my childhood maybe.
Yeah.
But I ended up having the effect from it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I had this situation the other week in Hackney, and there was a group, there was about 8 children, and we were doing Hapazome, and there was one boy who came with a teaching assistant because he was autistic, and so I taught him how to do it, and keeping his fingers away, and, you know, what leaves not to use in the area, he was happily doing this, you know, and he did that for a very long time, he absolutely adored it. He got up, and his TA was stood very nearby, just keeping an eye on things. It was all very fine. And then he went, here you go, here's your pencil back. Gave him back his pencil, and he's got this really long, sharp pencil like this. And then he starts running. And I was like, he said to me, the TA was like, it was it all right to teach an autistic child to use the hammer like that? And I was just watching this child running around with this really sharp pencil. And I was like, I think it is because I ran through all the safety measures, but however, can we just go take a while? And I was like...
And had they not seen it?
No.
Yeah.
He was like,
A pencil safe.
He comes with the pencil.
Yeah. But
that's his thing. He holds a sharp pencil, and it has to be sharp. That's his thing. And he runs around the playground with it, and I was like, if you're keeping an eye on and you know what the risks are, you assess that. That's up to you.
I don't question my
answer. Yeah. No, I was just like... Maybe can we give him the hammer? he was looking after him, but that was a funny situation to be in.
But yeah, you see, it's all relative.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to look at, you know, even as a forest school leader, is to say, okay, how this group of children, can we trust them to use the source about adult supervision?
Exactly.
Do they have to go, and do I have to do the whole safety talk every time? This group of children, I'm going to do the safety talk every time.
Okay.
So it depends on your children. It depends.
Mm.
And if you've got children you don't know, it's very different to children that you have every
exactly.
week.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, the first time you have them, you might have to go through the whole process. You might have to do it the second time. And that's where it's really hard when you only have them for 12 hours a year.
Mm.
You don't actually get to make those connections and to really get to know them. And that's why it becomes easier. The more you have them, and the better you get to know your children, the easier it is to work with them.
Yeah.
And the easier it is to trust them with, you know, what could be risky opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I like your idea of when you do the activity, you bring in the risk then.
Yeah.
I've got teenage kids now, and they sometimes come and help me do my holiday clubs, and I used to, sort of the beginning of the log circle, the beginning of the session, go, right, now we're going to do the rules. So I guess the whole lot, you know, boundaries and climbing and sticks. And I was chatting to my sons at the end, and I said, so how was that? And they were like, Mum, where do you start the day? Just by sitting the kids down and telling them all the rules. That's such a really depressing way to start. And I've never thought about it. That was kind of the teacher in me. I've got to set the boundaries and then they know, whatever. And so I completely changed it. And then, as he was saying, just when we were doing an activity, I might start with the three rules of look after yourself, look after each other, look after nature.
Yeah.
I was like, that, those are the only rules we have. And, you know, we'll talk about those and then I bring them in. And I think that's really important with children, isn't it? They are experiential learners. Well, we're all experiential learners, aren't we? That's why we enjoy these practical workshops. And we get that wrong sometimes by, well, I loved your picture of have fun on the playground, but they're all
the rest. And I think... I had a Korean group that came to Australia and wanted to come and see some bush kindies. And they, the Koreans do things properly. So if they're looking at investing in bush kindies or into forest kindies, they go to different schools and different places to go and have a look at it.
Mm.
And then, sorry. So I put them around. I did some PD, CPD with them. And at the end of it, she said, one of them said, well, she'd been to England and went to some forest school things, and she said, yours is more experiential.
There's water.
You need more water. I've got water
here. I just want to
end the session, but I'm...
She needs a gin.
It's
what you need.
I need a gin. Yeah, and so she was saying, the way I'm teaching is more the children experiencing things slowly, whereas what she experienced in the UK was more about the boundaries and how to use things, and it was a long lecture before every session.
Yeah.
They, I mean, it's like me, if we'd sat down and had a safety talk this morning for hours, even for 20 minutes, most of us would have shut off.
Yeah,
whereas if you wait for something to, you wait for... You know, because we're supervising, so we can see, okay, you know, the children are climbing too high. And then, you know, with this keeping safe, but my three rules that I spoke about this morning, you have a right to feel safe too, as the adult.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll often say to children, I know you can climb to the top of that tree, but it makes me feel unsafe.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you mind only climbing up to here, please? Because it makes me unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
So the child doesn't have anything to prove.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm thinking a little bit is that our risk assessments are often pre-written, aren't they? You know, we write them and then we're told we have to follow them. I know we can dynamically change things, but yeah, it's like...
But I've been to forest school sessions before where they've not had a fire for 6 weeks and yet they still spend 20 minutes at the sitting around the fire circle. And do we go into the fire circle?
Yeah,
and that's pointless, and it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
So it's really similar. So in early years, there's this in the moment planning, and there's this really lovely lady called Anna F. Gray, and she described a school that she went into, and a little boy that she was working with, and talking about circle time, which is very similar to the circle time that we have. So, you know, the children are sat down. And this little boy just turned around and said, it's a waste of my life.
That's brilliant.
Spot on.
And it is.
I'll never get it back. Yeah.
No, spot on. Yeah.
But maybe it reflects our sense of not being safe that we're doing.
Yes.
You know, I think there's a dynamic there, isn't there, between how safe and confident we are.
What are you going to do?
And what routines we put in place.
And concisely.
What do you do when, for example, when you're teaching them about capital, and do you talk about growth model with them? Or is
can I come in there? That is one thing I really struggle with in our whole thing, industry. Is calling it a blood bubble.
I know, I do too.
The children love it though.
Yeah, they know.
Tiny little children hearing about a blood bubble, and they go,
No, it depends on the age of the
children. Yeah, we do it with the little ones, with bigger ones. So with the little ones,
the saw doesn't have a blood bubble.
Yeah.
The saw is not dangerous.
Yeah.
But if they're using a knife, but we wouldn't use blood bubble with the 3-4-year-olds.
Yeah.
We would sit down with them and look at without touching it, where's the sharp end? Where's the not sharp end? But do you know what? Before they've even got there, we would have gone through loads of different activities to the point that we know that they are able to use the tool safely.
But they should be cutting fruit in this.
And they said they start off very little, very little size, chopping bananas.
And then there's that progression, so they get to work those outside.
So it's not just like, you know, you will have a new child at three, right? So we can sit down and put yourself a spoon.
And the knife is sharp.
Yeah.
I get frustrated when I see in childcare centres, you know, those knives that can't cut.
Yeah.
They give children to
but they're actually really dangerous because then what they do is they use too much force. So if they ever do have.
Well, exactly. So when they go visit granny, granny's got. A proper knife that is sharp.
Yeah.
Then there's a serious injury. Mm.
That's also these cut-proof gloves.
Chainmail things.
We just have to know that knives are. I mean, I still cut myself the other day.
Too.
It's not a, you know, again, it's not a serious injury.
Mm.
But in our culture, and our parents, these minor injuries are big. And I think, to a large extent, we as practitioners are responsible for that because we write those stupid accident forms for every little scrape and scratch.
I work with older children and the idea of them having that element of risk it scares them in a good way.
Yeah.
With bow saws and axes and the bill hooks.
Yeah.
You know, they need to know.
You see, that's a totally different. That's a totally different category. Those I would do with, you know, step by step instructions.
Yeah, yeah.
With the children,
it's so empowering for them to be able to do that safely and to help each other and work in pairs, like pair group. I mean, it's brilliant.
But you do the instructions when you're going to actually use the tool.
Not when you're doing it.
This is the bow saw that you might see in about 6 months'
time.
It's like showing us something exciting that's going to happen.
There's a picture of
the but I always try and keep that.
Next week we'll see the first half of it.
I always try and keep that it's a waste of my life thing. What am I trying to tell them that's not a waste of their life?
If we just see them glaze over, you know, everything else you say is just.
And you know what, with boys especially,
because
boys, if they can't see the purpose of something, they're damn well not going to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, boys, you have to have the important part of the message has to be the first three or four words.
Yeah.
Because, so I always say, when you're talking to boys, and I generalize when I say boys, because there's girls like that as well, is that you say, knives are sharp.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to talk about, and this is a knife, and because they switched off long before you get to the important bit. So with boys, you always make sure that you state the important message first, and then if you want to waffle on, you can. Because as women, we talk too much, so the boys often
True.
I mean, that's emotion. They're like,
that is
it's like men.
Yeah.
My voice just says, get to a point, stop waffling around it. So.
I can imagine if you say to a boy, that's a wonderful thing, you're making me nervous at the boss, you're going too tall, they'll be like, well, okay, I'm not nervous. Good. Okay.
Yeah. But that's why you say, I'm not feeling safe, because the rule is everybody's entitled to feel safe. And you can say, I'm not feeling safe. But, and also, if you say, I know you can climb to the top, then it's like they don't have to prove it.
Yeah.
Because you've already acknowledged that you know that.
And it's
can
also,
do that.
They're nurturing you back.
Yeah,
yes.
Yes.
Well, fitness looks if you feel unsafe.
Your feelings
fine.
Are important.
Yeah,
yeah. So we've digressed a little bit. but I hope you sort of got something out of the session.
Yeah.
But and I think the big thing is to look at. You know, the forest school model is a really good model. It's had a huge impact. It's had hundreds of thousands of children are now going outside where they weren't previously. But our practice needs to constantly change.
Mm.
And we need to reflect on every bit we do.
Mm.
Just because you do it one way with one group of children doesn't mean you do it the same with the next.
Mm.
And I'm going to stop now so I can continue.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome to email me if you've got questions.
Thank you very much.
I'm quite sure to give